This week, the United States Senate Foreign Relations Committee held the opening rounds of a national debate on whether, how, when, and whereabouts to invade Iraq and destroy Saddam Hussein. A range of witnesses testified about the threat Iraq might pose to the United States and other nations. Among those who testified were Jeffrey Kemp, Director of Regional Strategic Studies at the Nixon Center in Washington, D.C., who joins us in our studios. Mr. Kemp, thank you for being with us.
Hello.
And Shibley Tilhami, who holds the Anwar Sadat Chair of the Department of Government and Politics at the University of Maryland, who also testified. Thank you very much for being with us. Gentlemen, let me ask you first, in turn, Mr. Kemp and Mr. Tilhami, in your mind, was this a real debate that we heard this week, or has a decision been made?
I think it's a real debate. I think the turnout of senators is one very good indicator of how seriously the Congress takes it. For the first time, I think the public at large and the academic community are going to start to get into this debate because they've been very cowed since 9/11. There's been a sense that if you talk out against the war with Iraq, you somehow won't be patriotic. I think now people are facing up to the fact this is going to be a serious war if it takes place, and that the aftermath of that war could keep us in the Middle East for many, many years to come at enormous expense.
Mr. Tilhami.
I certainly agree that I don't believe a final decision has been made. But bottom line, I think the question that came out of these hearings, besides the obvious disagreements on the possible costs and consequences of a military attack on Iraq to dislodge its government, was that there were really conflicting views on what the aims of American foreign policy toward Iraq are.
10 years ago, a previous U.S. administration reached the judgment that it did not have the mandate to continue the ground assault into Iraq and try to replace Saddam Hussein's government. What, in your judgment, Mr. Kemp, Mr. Tilhami, has changed over the past 10 years?
9/11. I mean, this changes everything. Now the administration correctly sees countries like Iraq to be threats that cannot be allowed to fester. In 1990-91, the mandate from the UN, from the Senate, from the country at large was expel the Iraqis from the Kuwait theater of operations, not remove the regime of Saddam Hussein. Now I think they believe that you cannot deal with the terrorism problem, with the WMD problem, with Saddam Hussein in power in Baghdad. Therefore, the regime has to go. This is not something that our allies like to hear. They'd much prefer us to couch it in terms of UN resolutions and the need to deal with the WMD problem.
WMD, weapons of mass destruction.
Right. But believe you me, this administration believes regime change is essential.
Mr. Tilhami.
Well, you know, I think Jeffrey is right about 9/11 certainly changing America's view of the world and American priorities, but it has not changed the world. And as a consequence, I think, while a lot of people around the world are sort of reconciled to the fact that America is the only superpower and it is about to embark on all sorts of things alone, most of them are clearly expressing the view that they don't like American unilateralism.
What are the costs of keeping the policy more or less as it is, of assuming that Saddam Hussein could be a terrific danger, but that he is containable?
There's two things I think the administration correctly worries about. One is a linkage, direct or indirect, present or future, between the Saddam Hussein regime and al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups who would use WMD against us surreptitiously. The second is that ultimately Saddam Hussein, if he is not removed, will get stronger because he will break out from UN sanctions. Iraq is a rich country, and sooner or later he will get a sufficient arsenal of weapons of mass destruction, not to use, but to intimidate, and essentially to protect Iraq from American strikes. At that point, Iraq will be able to do perhaps what he wanted to do in 1990, that is to exercise hegemonic control over the Gulf and the oil. And we would be faced with a very formidable threat.
You know, it's interesting. If you look actually at some of the logic of why a lot of other states around the world, especially in the Middle East, ultimately oppose a military strike at this time against Iraq, it is largely for two reasons. One is that they don't think that the regime now is threatening that it now has capacities to threaten them in some way. But more importantly, I think, is they think of the regime differently. They think of it as being containable. If you take the position that your aim is to overthrow the government, that you cannot live with this government under any circumstances, that there is no scenario, even a scenario of Iraq free of weapon mass destruction, you are not going to live with this regime, then I think Jeffrey's logic is right. If it's a dual aim, if the primary aim is overthrow the regime, then clearly a military strike is likely and the logic is likely to take us there. If it is only Iraq free of weapons of mass destruction, the logic may take you somewhere else.
Let me ask you, gentlemen, finally, America as a nation doesn't like to strike first. Have circumstances changed that the American public would support a first strike? Has Saddam Hussein, one way or another, launched the first strike, as far as you're concerned?
We have preempted dozens of times in covert operations. What people are worried about is a formal doctrine which calls for the use of our regular military forces to preempt a range of threats around the world. And I think there would be an unease about implementing this strategy unless the president proves not just to the American public, but I think to world opinion, that we have no options but to do this.
Imagine if the Chinese start also employing a similar doctrine, or the Russians, or the Indians, or anyone else around the world, what sort of order we might have. It's going to increase the propensity for states to acquire nuclear weapons. It is going to increase it as the only way they can deter unilateral policy. So in a way, it's going to undermine the logic of deterrence that we're employing at the very same time that other states are going to have an incentive to try to come up with a way to deter us. So I see it as being self-defeating in the long term.
Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
Pleasure.
Jeffrey Kemp directs strategic studies at the Nixon Center in Washington, D.C., and Shibley Tilhami teaches government and politics at the University of Maryland.